If you're interested in listening ad-free, go to patreon.com/drnosleep. There you can enjoy my ad-free podcast and never have to listen to ads again. That's patreon.com/drnosleep. Now time for the story.
Talk to Nosleep.
Unleash the terror with exclusive access to my horror podcast on Patreon. Early releases and bonus episodes await you. We all have stories that we know we'll never get a chance to tell. Stories that are too horrible, too inexplicable, or simply too bizarre to explain. Maybe that's why I feel a need to tell this story to strangers now. I mean, how would I even begin to tell a story like this to a friend? Oh, by the way, I was kidnapped when I was 7 years old and the perpetrator was never caught. Should I also add that every time I hear the floorboards creak or a car door slam, I'm sure that it's about to happen again. In my memories, my kidnapper doesn't have a face. He just has shiny black shoes, an ugly blue suit, and sunburned hands with a plain gold wedding band. I can't help but imagine him as 5 times my size, just as he was then. I can still hear his voice, like the voice of God, booming down from high above. It wasn't my parents' fault. They warned me not to talk to strangers, and they kept an eye on me while I played. But no one can be everywhere at once, and anyone can make a mistake. I remember my last moments as a normal child with startling clarity. The green smell of the fresh-cut grass on the soccer field, the noise of coaches and players and parents shouting all at once. Lemon-lime Gatorade sloshed in my stomach. I needed to pee, and a cold sweat broke out on my forehead when I realized that I'd never make it to the restroom. Instead, I ducked into the cool darkness of the trees. I barely pulled my mesh shorts back up when I heard leaves crunch behind me. A funny-smelling cloth was pressed over my face. I woke hours later in the backseat of a car, being driven by a man I'd never seen before. A man in a hideous blue suit.
Who are you?
I asked, groggily.
Where are my parents?
Why, I'm Mr. Blue.
He looked at me in the rearview mirror and smiled.
And it's not safe for you to be around those people you call your parents. But don't you worry, we're going to take excellent care of you.
What are you talking about? Let me out of here, mister. I want to go home. I want to see my mom and dad.
I screamed through my tears. Still sluggish from the drug, I fumbled uselessly with the child locks.
Hey!
I said.
I want to go home! Let me out!
Mr. Blue just ignored my tears. He just smiled and drove. Even more terrifying than the strange man behind the wheel was the fact that I couldn't recognize anything outside the windows. How would I ever find my way home? Mr. Blue turned down a tree-lined, one-lane road, then up a gravel drive so overgrown that branches scraped against the car like demon's claws. I wondered if the summer leaves overhead were the last thing I'd ever see. He parked in front of a low gray building and opened my door.
Out you go.
I did as I was told. Then I started to run the moment my feet hit the gravel. Mr. Blue swept me up easily and carried me into the building beneath his arm. My kicking and biting and punching didn't even wipe the smile off his face.
You got guts, kid. I'll give you that. You remind me of my son.
He slammed the thick metal door shut with one hand and locked it behind him. The building, or the center, as the adults called it, seemed more like an old pole barn that had quickly and cheaply been converted into something else. There were 4 gray metal bunk beds on the far wall, a counter with a hot plate on it, a closed bathroom door, and some secondhand bookshelves. It was a small setup that reminded me of the science classroom at my elementary school, an improvised laboratory. The whole thing was lit by generator-powered work lights that the darkness crowded hungrily around. Strange letters written in chalk on the floor and walls created pathways throughout the space, all leading toward the center of the building. And the only part of it upon which no expense had been spared was a huge plexiglass cube. Even more unsettling was what I saw inside, a perfect replica of an upper-middle-class child's bedroom, complete with blocks, picture books, stuffed animals, a Snoopy nightlight, and a hideous pink carpet. Three other children stood behind the thick glass walls, silently watching my arrival. As Mr. Blue explained to me, the only way into or out of my new room was an airlock, through which only one child at a time was allowed to pass. If I needed anything, to use the bathroom, drink water, or eat, I could push a button on a panel inside the cube, and one of the caretakers would tend to my needs. I'd never felt so small or alone as when I did when Mr. Blue set me down inside the airlock. I found myself holding onto his suit sleeve, even though he'd taken me from my parents. I didn't want him to go. I didn't want to be left alone with those three strange kids on the other side of the glass.
"Don't worry,"
Mr. Blue said kindly as he tugged himself free of me.
"I'm sure the four of you will be great friends."
He backed out the door before I could stop him, and the other side of the airlock hissed open.
"The bed with the green sheets is mine. You can't have it,"
a tiny boy with a blonde buzz cut said as a greeting.
"That's Ted. Ignore him."
A tall girl with honey-colored skin with cornrows rolled her eyes at me.
"I'm Chris. That's Amanda. Hi."
Amanda pushed her thick glasses up on her nose and scratched her belly nervously.
"I'm Will."
I held out my hand the way my father had taught me. Ted crossed his arms and looked away. Amanda waved awkwardly. Chris gave me a shake that nearly tore my arm off.
"Why are we here?"
"Don't know,"
Chris shrugged.
"They grabbed me while I was playing hopscotch. They keep talking about some kind of tests,"
Amanda murmured.
"Theodore Kelch, step into the airlock. Theodore Kelch, into the airlock."
The harsh female voice on the intercom made us all jump.
"I won't,"
Ted whined. With a horrific screech, a machine on the ceiling kicked on, blasting frigid air into our bizarre glass cage.
"Ah,"
Chris whispered to me.
"Ted does this every time. And if we don't do what they say, make it get colder and brighter in here, do.
In our thin summer clothes, our teeth started chattering almost immediately. The intense light soon became unbearable.
"Go, Ted!"
Chris finally shouted, shoving the small boy into the airlock. The door slid closed. The temperature began to return to normal. A gaunt woman in a badly fitted emerald-colored pantsuit stood on the other side of the glass.
"Oh no,"
Amanda mouthed.
"Miss Green."
"What?"
I panicked.
"Who's she?"
"They're all bad,"
Chris whispered.
"But she's the worst."
Ted wiped snot and tears away with a pudgy fist. He looked over his shoulder at us as the tall woman led him away. We never saw him again. Time became like quicksand in that weird, glass-walled room, and my memories of those first days all ran together. The lights above us were the only indicator of whether it was day or night outside. When they turned off, the nightlight lit up automatically, and eerie nursery music played on the speakers. I spent the endless hours flipping through picture books, plotting an escape with Chris, and playing blocks with Amanda when she was there to play with. A man in a tan polo shirt, Mr. Brown, came to take her away from time to time. Unlike Ted, she went quietly. And, unlike Ted, she came back. Chris and I interrogated her eagerly when she came back, but her descriptions of the tests were muddled at best. They didn't make any sense. One time, Amanda said the adults drew a bunch of funny letters on her skin and made her lay in a shallow hole in the ground. Apart from her nose and mouth, they covered her completely with dirt. They told her to say something if she heard or felt anything unusual, but she never did. Another time, they had her say some funny words to big rocks. Then they put her ear to each stone and listened for a reply. Chris thought Amanda was lying. According to Chris, the tests hurt. When Mrs. Red took Chris away, she made her walk on burning embers, or try to blow out a bonfire, or grab a piece of wood and squeeze until her fingers cramped. If she knew what the adults hoped would happen when she did those things, she never told me. The only thing Chris confirmed were the funny letters the adults had drawn on her too, and what they'd drawn looked an awful lot like the symbols on the floor outside of her glass cage. The days blended together. I pressed the buzzer, went to the bathroom, then went back to the glass cage again. We were fed tasteless but nutritious meals three times a day, and brought one by one to the bathroom to clean ourselves up. I realized there were four adults who took care of us, working in shifts and sometimes disappearing for days at a time, probably looking for other kids. Although our kidnappers did their best to keep us in the dark about who they were and what they wanted, little by little, I began to get some idea of the differences between them. Mrs. Red was frightened, either of us or for us. The tension in her every step showed how she expected us to either shatter or explode any minute. Mr. Brown was cold, cynical, and methodical. He spoke only when necessary and seemed to view us all as points on a graph. Mr. Blue was the kindest and most talkative. He seemed genuinely concerned for our welfare and sorry for what we were going through. And just as Chris had said, Miss Green was the worst. She treated us like enemy prisoners. Once I overheard an argument between her and Mr. Blue. Although I didn't understand the meaning of the words, I recall that conversation with chilling clarity.
The danger, if you're wrong, is incalculable,
Miss Green snarled, as I listened with my ear pressed against the fabricated bathroom wall. Mr. Blue sighed.
These kids need a chance to learn to control it. If my son had been given that chance.
And once they know what they are, what if they choose to give in? Have you thought about that,
They're children,
Mr. Blue pleaded.
They are vessels. And if you can't get that into your head, you're a liability to our cause.
With that, Miss Green burst into the bathroom and dragged me back with so much force, I thought my wrist might break. The lonely shadow of Mr. Blue watched from beside the hot plate. The next day, he took me out of the glass prison for my first test.
Now just take deep breaths. Don't be afraid. And tell me if you feel anything unusual, all right?
Mr. Blue was saying. I was floating in a plastic bathtub, blindfolded and fully dressed. I was getting bored. I supposed I should have been grateful that at least I wasn't being made to catch flames or any of the other painful stuff Chris had described. All the same, I wondered what was supposed to be happening. Mr. Blue had drawn these weird symbols on my forehead, hands, and feet with waterproof paint. But nothing seemed to be happening. I wondered what Mr. Blue and the others were expecting. I wondered if I should make something up. Then I felt something moving in the bathwater. I splashed and flailed, trying to pull off the blindfold. Mr. Blue demanded to know what was going on.
Say nothing.
An oily voice whispered into my still submerged ears.
What is it? What's going on?
Mr. Blue was screaming. Miss Green and Mrs. Red murmured excitedly behind him. The water had been clear and empty when I got into the tub. Clearly, the adults still couldn't see or hear anything. I forced myself to stay calm and float again.
Nothing,
I burbled, spitting.
I just started to sink.
I could feel the adults' suspicion, but the invisible thing in the water with me writhed with glee.
Good,
it hissed.
Now those abominations on your skin, wipe them off.
It was talking about the letters. The water swirled impatiently below me. The more nervous I got, the more wildly it sloshed around. The adults began to notice.
Oh God, it's starting, just like with Ted.
Mrs. Red screeched.
Get him out!
Mr. Blue's strong hands lifted me up and placed me, spluttering, on the ground. He wrapped me in a towel and walked me back inside the line of strange characters written on the floor. He knelt down in front of me, his hands on my shoulders. I wondered if this was how he talked to his own son.
Tell me about it,
he said.
The water started moving funny,
I replied carefully.
That's all? What about voices? Any visions?
I don't know,
I stammered.
I got scared.
Visions of my parents flashed through my head. If I kept it secret, maybe the thing in the water could help me get back to them. Mr. Blue looked into my eyes, his brow furrowed, searching.
It's very important that you tell us if you notice anything strange. If you don't tell us, we can't protect you. That's why you're here, you know.
I don't want to be protected,
I cried.
I want to go home.
When you're strong enough, maybe you can.
Mr. Blue's smile was more like a grimace, and I wasn't sure who he was trying to convince, me or himself. He led me to the bathroom. As I washed and redressed in the small improvised room, I kept hoping to see shapes moving in the shower spray. or words forming on the fogged-up mirror, but none did. The buzz of the adults' conversation followed me, until the airlock and the plexiglass walls cut it out completely. Whatever I'd done, it had caused a stir. Chris knew, too. She raised her eyebrows and pressed a finger to her lips. I understood. It wasn't safe to talk out loud. I noticed she had bandages on her arm. Chris picked up a picture book, using it to hide her moving lips.
You know, after his last test, Ted said he heard somebody talking to him.
Who do you think it was?
I don't know. But sometimes, when they're telling me to move my hand through a flame or something, I see this thing in the smoke. An awful thing with horns and claws and eyes like fire. It doesn't say anything, but I think it wants me to rub the letters off, you know? The ones they paint on us before the tests.
I suddenly felt watched. Looking up from the book, I nearly screamed. Miss Green was standing with her face practically pressed against the glass of our cage. In retrospect, I think she was trying to read our lips. We scurried back to our beds, petrified. But neither of us were called to the airlock. That's when I realized that Amanda was missing. The overhead light dimmed, the nightlight flickered on, and that tiny lullaby music played from the speakers. Chris and I both went to bed, but I could feel her eyes on me in the dark. I knew we were both thinking about the same things. Escape, our families, and whatever had happened to Amanda and Ted. I woke to the crackle of the intercom.
William Breathitt to the airlock. William Breathitt to the airlock.
I looked around, confused. It was still dark in our creepy, glass-walled bedroom cell. Worse, the voice seemed to be whispering, as though fearful of being overheard. I shuffled out of my sheets. Chris sat up in bed.
Will, don't go,
she whispered. It was too late. I was through the airlock before I was even fully awake. Miss Green was waiting. I looked around nervously. Mr. Blue, Mrs. Red, and Mr. Brown were all sleeping in the military-style bunk beds against the wall. Miss Green was probably supposed to keep watch, but instead, she grabbed the back of my neck, covered my mouth with a bony hand, and marched me out the main door of the center. I was outside again for the first time in days. Everything from the twinkling of the stars to the swaying of trees in the night air felt new, strange, and miraculous. Wherever Mr. Blue had taken me, it was far enough out in the country that there was almost no light pollution. I could see just fine by the light of the moon and stars. It was almost enough to distract me from the vice-like grip of the fanatical woman behind me. As she pushed me forward through the overgrown grass, past stacks of rotting tractor tires and broken-down sheds, I wondered where she was taking me and why. I nearly fell into it before I realized what it was. A round, lightless mouth in the ground. A well. I could hear the trickle of water far below. It was like it was calling to me, but I didn't want to go. A rope and pulley apparatus was hooked up to a gnarled tree limb over the ancient well. I looked from it to Miss Green with horror, but there was no mercy in her determined glare. I decided to make a run for it when the gaunt woman expertly pulled my legs out from under me and tied them with the rope. Her speed and precision gave me a terrifying insight. She'd done this before. I screamed and flailed like a caught fish when she heaved me into the air, but I knew it would do no good. The center was too far away, and there was no one else to hear my cries. As Miss Green lowered me upside down into the pit, I noticed writing on the cracked stone rim of the well. They were the same symbols that had been drawn on my skin the last time they'd put me in the water. I recalled the oily voice.
Those abominations. Wipe them off.
I pretended to struggle and flail while Miss Green lowered me into the water, but I had a plan. Once I was close enough to the stony rim, I swung wide, smearing muck across one of the weird letters. I had no idea what I'd just done. I only hoped it would help me survive the damp darkness that I was being lowered headfirst into. It was a long way down to the water. As its freezing blackness covered my face, that slimy voice wormed its way into my ears again.
Foolish woman. She thought she could trap me. But you have done well. Oh yes, very well indeed. Now we will trap her.
Its excitement made the well bubble, as though it were boiling. My lungs burned. I was running out of air.
Let me in,
Let me in.
Let me in.
The scream inside my head was so loud that my eyes and mouth popped open at once. Cold water and something more rushed into my lungs. I felt it right away. I was no longer alone inside my own body. It coiled and uncoiled my fingers and toes, getting used to its new home. Even if I'd wanted to fight it, I wouldn't have stood a chance. I should have been drowning, but I was fine. I should have been terrified, but I felt oddly detached from everything that was happening. I was just an observer, along for the ride. I watched myself slither snake-like up the rope, moving in ways that should have been impossible for my 7-year-old body. I watched myself leap at Miss Green, screeching something at her in a language I didn't know. I felt my fingers close around her eyes and pull them from her skull, like plucking grapes from a vine. I don't remember much after that. I awoke to Mrs. Red and Mr. Brown screaming. The center was in flames. Chris was touching the fire and transforming as I had transformed, before disappearing into the smoke. Mr. Blue was kneeling, cutting his arm, holding it in the tub of water and chanting something. He looked at nothing but me, and while I didn't understand his words, I understood their meaning. Take me instead. As Mr. Blue pulled my hand into the water beside his own, the presence left my body. I blacked out. When I awoke, it was raining. The air smelled like wet ashes. The smoking remains of the center lay behind me. The gravel road lay ahead. I walked on aching legs for what felt like miles until I found the one-lane country road. The first car that passed pulled to a stop. 5 hours later, I was in a hospital room with my family. I'd been missing for 6 days. Police identified the vehicles of Mr. Blue, Mrs. Red, Mr. Brown, and Miss Green as having been seen near the sites of the other abductions. But as to who they were or what they wanted, there was no evidence apart from my own garbled, childish testimony. The psychiatrists tried to get me to stop drawing Mr. Blue's crude symbols on my hands, feet, and face. They called it an irrational defense mechanism and a reaction to my trauma. Who knows? Maybe they're right. Maybe the voice I hear when I'm in the water is only in my head. But then, why does it sound so familiar?
Wipe off those abominations,
it whispers.
Let me in. It will be even better than last time. I promise.
Hey guys, thanks for listening. I want to give you all a quick heads up regarding some upcoming political ads you may start hearing leading up to this year's presidential election. These ads do not represent my own political viewpoint. So if you hear a political ad play on the podcast and it's not in my own voice, then it has absolutely nothing to do with me personally as a podcaster. Thank you again for being a dedicated listener of mine, and I can't wait to have another amazing year with you guys. I'll see you in the next episode.